I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, but the first television I ever did was the O'Reilly Factor.
I do know this.
Prime We'll Do It Live era.
I do know
Papa Bear, Bill O'Reilly. So, hello. Hello.
Also. You were at Sports Illustrated at the time, and the person who normally talks on TV wasn't there. So they put you on as an expert. And then what started you. And now you have a far wing internet show.
That's right. It's called Debatable. Only the truth. Only the truth. Hello, Spencer Hall. Hello, Dominique Foxworth. Hello, Internet. This is Debatable.
Nice shirt, Pablo.
An extremist fake television show where me and Dominique wear the same shirt. Alabaster, how are you feeling today?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. And I'm very happy that our good buddy, our friend who we talk about at length often, Kyrie Irving, became a news story again today because him and the Nets aren't great right now. My question to you guys is, what does it tell you that the Nets are in an impasse with Kyrie Irving?
So can we just start by saying that this whole story feels like it was generated by one of those AI generators? Like, you put in, like, NBA clickbait and it spits out, Kyrie Irving wants out, plus Knicks, plus Lakers. And so Shams Charania reports this in The Athletic, basically that. Like, Kyrie and the Nets are not good, and there are options that are being considered vaguely. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the question was that you asked, but all of this made me laugh, and I'm very glad to talk about it today.
The idea that they're at an impasse, I think, is progress in the right direction. And the idea that he's going to stay, as far as I'm concerned, because last time we left it, the GM was making it quite clear that, at least to me, that KD was on board and they were not interested in keeping Kyrie. So impasse suggests that there might be some way to mend these fences. So maybe you read this as like, he's out of here for sure. I read this as, oh, maybe not, because I thought he was out for sure a few weeks ago.
Wait, Spencer, Dominique is seeing the word impasse and crossing out the M is what he's saying.
Yeah, we've reached a passé with the Nets. I know this, that the Celtics collapsed and not 24 hours later. It's agent season, baby. It's agent. Yeah. If you read any story over the next like 3 months in the NBA, guess what it's going to be? Sources say. When you see sources, guess what that means? Agents. It means agents, y'all. Everybody figure it out. Just talk to them. So it's agent season. We've reached an impasse. We're now, this is when you see the big words come out, right? You say they can't agree.
That's
no,
right.
It's an impasse. It's dramatic.
It's a canyon with boulders blocking a caravan of Kyrie Irving's.
The most, y'all got a problem happens over $20, right? An impasse happens over $30 million. That's
the
that's
most
when
interesting
we bring out the big
part
words.
Of the Kyrie Irving story to me is how do other teams, like other star players, other general managers. Like, I could care less what's happening in the Nets front office because I kind of feel like I know what's happening there. I'm more interested in what's happening in the other front offices. How do you evaluate this? Because he's obviously too talented for no one to want him. Someone's going to want him. It's going to be a contender. And what are you telling yourself? What are you telling the owner of the team? What are you telling the star? If you're the GM, or what are you telling the GM if you're the star who wants Kyrie there? That's so confusing to me.
Wait, I love this. I love the job we were now assigning ourselves of what would you do if you were Kyrie Irving's agent, as Spencer just framed it, right? Mm-hmm. And Dominique, you're saying, like, how do you present yourself to these front offices? You know what I'm doing, actually? I am going Don Draper Mad Men carousel with just slides of Andrew Wiggins. I'm saying, say you want somebody who has a ton of potential, click. Somebody who came through in the NBA finals, click. Somebody who may have expressed vaccine hesitancy, click. Someone you think you can't rely on, click. Well, look at this. Look at this beautiful maniac that is Kyrie Irving. No, that's the argument to me. It's that there is no such thing as goods that are that damaged. And that was a terrible Don Draper. I apologize. I didn't actually see Mad Men. I just saw that scene on YouTube once.
Yeah, I've never seen Mad Men either.
Thank you for copying to that. I'm the only one who's seen the show here. Yeah. And yet, you lean in.
It's good.
I don't read books, but I checked out the Wiki article. That's... That's outstanding. I think, by the way, like, I don't think he's a hard sell. I really don't.
Yeah.
Like we got analytical people running these front offices, and they're going to see the numbers. the numbers are still good when he's on the floor. And the only thing that's really kept him off the floor, there have been like some injury concerns, but on the whole, it's been COVID. It's been his vaccine hesitancy. I still think the fundamentals are good.
Fundamentals of the economy are
I'm telling you what the nerds are going to say. And the nerds run the front offices.
I got you, but I think that the problem is it was such big news. Like this I know the nerds think of us as robots and they only think of numbers that you input into a system, but they have to understand that it wasn't like a minor thing. It was a season-long saga of him being unreliable, not unreliable in his talent or his ability to work within the system, which maybe other people could dissect that. Like, just is he going to show the hell up? Yeah. And also on top of it, I can't imagine a group of people that could be more off-put by his, like, sometimes religious, pseudo-spiritual, like, tweets and Instagram posts and motivations and saging, like all of that, like fake science stuff has to make these nerds incredible. I feel like they're harder to than the non-nerds.
Counterpoint, two words in Spanish, Los Angeles. Los Angeles. Where will this fly? In no-nonsense New York? No. Where will this fly? This will undoubtedly fly in Los Angeles.
So quick side note, because I think it's not, I was trying to figure out when do I get offended by just saying the word nerd over and over again, and I think it's now. I think I should just point out that it's also people who are like thinking to themselves, wait a minute, hold on. Kyrie Irving also took like the day off of work or days off of work after the January 6th insurrection, which on one level I'm like, totally get it. On the other level, I'm like, I don't know anybody else who did that. He also kind of disappeared for times with just mysterious medical maladies, which feels like an old school GM thing that you'd be frustrated by as well. But I will say this about what the Lakers have theoretically on this table that Shams Charadia has generated out of thin air, right? They have Russell Westbrook. And this is how this works. Alabaster, correct me if I'm wrong, right? For us to fully buy in to the Kyrie Irving to the Lakers hypothetical, we're really talking about Russell Westbrook also going to the Brooklyn Nets, aren't we?
No.
Yeah,
no.
unless we get Kyrie taking the mid-level exception for $6 million, then yeah, we're reuniting KD and Russ. We're balancing the scales.
Amazing.
Is there a three-team trade or something? Because there is absolutely no way in hell Kevin Durant is going to allow for this to be the way that he ends his career. Like, I can't imagine a scenario outside of the All-Star game or some sort of charity tournament 10 years from now that Kevin Durant and Russell, or that Kevin Durant will willingly step on the floor with Russell Westbrook, particularly off of last season. So maybe he doesn't have the strength in the front office to keep Kyrie if that's what he wants, but I'm sure he has the pull. Because again, if we're saying the nerds run the front office, the nerds don't want him. They don't want Westbrook. I'm sorry.
We have no two more polar players involved in a potential sign and trade, et cetera, than Kyrie, whose problem is on the floor, fine, off the floor, not. And Russell Westbrook, who's off the floor, fine, on the floor, that's the issue. Like, if you want new problems, right? And sometimes I think GMs and execs just want new problems. There you go. I got new problems for you.
No, Russell Westbrook on the floor too much is the converse problem that Kyrie Irving poses. So
too much on the floor. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, like, how does this actually happen? I think what Dominique hinted at, referring to an episode of Debatable we did many moons ago now, at least it feels that way, is whether Kevin Durant is on board with this. And I think this is sort of the key question also, right? Because to me, when Sean Marks was saying all that stuff in that press conference that was more than a little passive aggressive, to me, and we said this at the time, there is no way that Kevin Durant allows that to happen without some sort of backroom sign-off. And Kevin Durant has been on Twitter recently in recent days talking about how he's an employee, he's a player, the coach is the leader, he is just a guy. And all of it feels like it, yes, adds up to this question here, right? Do you expect KD to force his way out if Kyrie leaves? I do not for that reason. I think Kevin Durant is trying to stay there and he is happy quietly to let Kyrie Irving go spin off into another even stranger galaxy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think we don't talk as much about Kevin Durant's off the field like aspirations as we do about LeBron James, but Kevin Durant is building something also, which happens to be headquartered in the city that he's in. So like to the degree that that matters, yeah. And I think that he is as alert or sensitive to his legacy and how he's being talked about as anyone, or at least he's as outspoken about his sensitivity as anyone. I don't believe that he would believe that forcing his way out again would be a good thing.
You know where he could go, y'all? He already has the shirt.
No, he can't do it. He can't do it again. What's up, Alabaster? Did we do something wrong, basketball nerd?
No. I actually think that's fascinating. What I find fascinating about your comment, Dominique, is like he cares so much about his legacy and wanting to build something special. But this Warriors run and what Steph Curry did in the finals has changed the perception of KD's success in Golden State so much that like it almost feels like he needs an accomplishment to validate everything else he's done in his career to a lot of people. Not to balance people like you, but like he can't do that without Kyrie. He's going to be stuck in no man's land in Brooklyn without him.
Do you remember last year's playoffs? We were talking about KD. Had he hit that shot? We're talking about KD, like, see what he's done. He's come back from this injury, and he's the best player in the NBA. That's what we were saying a year ago. And now it's like, well, he never drove a bus, like, which is absurd that the critique that we pulled out on KD is like,
it does suck for him.
But how many wheels in the vehicle, though?
No, he cannot win. He cannot win. Like, that's
even
like,
when he wins, yes.
Even when he wins, right? Like, I going to play for Golden State at the time, by the way, I don't know how anyone had a problem with it. They said, do you want to go play with this awesome team? And he took so much flack for that. Whereas if you got invited to the Dream Team at any other career-type situation in your job, you'd just leap right in. Like, the thing the only critique of him is that he didn't do it by himself. That's the current critique, right? Oh, well, we go to the Nets. And he didn't do it all by himself.
What's so frustrating for Kevin Durant, I imagine, is that over time, he has been like incrementally forced, I think, to begin to care about basketball in the way that the nerds he despises care about basketball.
Blog boys. The blog boys have won him over.
Because the whole thing about the Warriors was like, I'm going to go play the most fun style of basketball that exists. I'm going to go be a team member who subsumes my ego, and I'm going to just play the beautiful game. And everyone was like, wow, what a loser. And now he's like, okay, well, what the hell now? What are we supposed to do now?
Like, I mean, if you want to critique anything about KD, it's that he tweets. Don't tweet. He shouldn't tweet. He has no reason to. He has too much money to tweet. If I had Kevin Durant's money, like instant that thing hit the bank account, my phone goes straight off the ferry and into the river.
Actually, I feel the opposite. I feel like when you have so much money, then that's when you should be tweeting because can't nobody hurt you at that point. When you are trying to get some money, then a tweet might throw you off. It might ruin your career, ruin all your money. But KD's like, say whatever the hell I want. I want to get to FU levels of money.
You never go full Elon Musk. That to me is the lesson of our time. Don't do that. But okay, hold on. Because Alabaster, you're trying to interject here, but I want to see if your interjection is going to align with what I'm interested in right now, which is can the Knicks actually get Kyrie Irving?
God.
Well, do the that Knicks was one of the things I was wondering about. Oh, I was gonna propose a different fake trade. Well, let's go to the funny. Knicks first. But like,
it's so funny to me.
Well, and like, it's hilarious. But like, what does that look like? He probably wants out of the Knicks in a year. Like, that's gotta be the one crazier situation than this.
It's the one that I think. So it's funny to imagine. It's delicious to imagine him reuniting with LeBron in Los Angeles. I agree. But the idea of Kyrie being still in New York with the Knicks, now trying to like undermine the Nets, and the idea that once upon a time, I was told sources close to the situation, actually not agents in this case, full disclosure on my end, said that Kyrie Irving wanted to go to the Knicks. Like that was his dream. He was from the New York to Jersey area. That was actually the dream. It wasn't the Nets, which is unshocking when you think about it in retrospect. But the idea that the Knicks, right, what do they have to offer, right? They just got to like jettison four giant contracts. Like they're at the cap line right now. They don't have space. They need to basically and by the way, with the Knicks blow up, you know, no one's going to cry for the building that they're going to demolish, but they're going to have to do a lot to get him in there. And they'll have to sign him as a free agent straight up.
I'm concerned that Alabaster doesn't really fully understand Kyrie to the way that I understand him. If you think he's going to force him, his way out of the Knicks next year, like, I don't know. I feel like the Knicks might be the one location that Kyrie would be happiest, because they are thirsty for anything. And he's made it quite clear that, like, at least by his behavior, that winning a championship is not necessarily at the top of it. Just showing up every now and then and balling out, taking some time. Like, I feel like the Knicks would love him.
I got a follow-up question here. If he goes to the Knicks, and Pablo, this is probably mostly for you as the New York guy. Who's more popular in New York, Kevin Durant in Brooklyn or Kyrie with the Knicks, if Kyrie goes to the Knicks this offseason?
You know the answer. You know the answer. Bing bong guy is going to find a way to unvaccinate himself. Like, it's going to be a whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's going to be radicalized. Everybody is going to be on board with the guy who, as Dominique said, mostly just wants to, like, ball out on occasion.
I mean,
and has no real commitment to actual winning principles, which is entirely the New York Knicks philosophy.
If the fact that Pablo is on the red carpet for a film premiere last week because one walk-on got hot for a couple weeks tells you something about the New York Knicks fan base. I think Kyrie.
How dare you?
I think Kyrie will be a legend in that city.
The
minute he puts up like 18, 9, and 7 in a game, everyone's going to be full bing bong pill.
Kai Sanity,
sell the shirts, baby.
Yeah. I mean, to be clear, it is both agent season and also Asian season at the same time. That's what the month of June has been for me.
Oh, man. So you meet some celebrities. Did they recognize you?
Oh, yeah. I'm huge. I'm huge in Asia, as it turns out. Alabaster withdrew his...
You just picked a whole continent. You just picked like 50% of the Earth's population.
To paraphrase Denzel, that continent picked me. That continent landed on me. Alabaster, you tried to interject there, and then we took it wildly off the rails towards my personal...
I had a fake trade, which is just to say that if KD really wants to play with Kyrie, couldn't he just sort of force his way to wherever Kyrie goes? Couldn't we see a little KD for Anthony Davis and two first-round picks trade? Couldn't we see a KD to the Knicks in a trade? I mean, like, we talk about this player stuff, and the Nets are not afraid to play for the future and get a ton of picks. They have the Harden picks. They'd get juicy picks in the future from any team that got these guys.
Alabaster, when are you just gonna sort of give into your destiny and just make like the new ball sack sports? Like, this is clearly what you're most passionate about. Yeah. Coming up with fake trades that will clickbait audiences into just being trolled. So just go and do that.
And then Ben Simmons could force a trade for James Harden back to Philadelphia. There we go.
Next topic.
Okay. Yeah, no, this is you're so deep into the Reddit.
We've never had to pull Alabaster back to the spine of the show. It's the first time that we've ever had to drag him back in. Wiggins question.
Who's watching the Watcher? Oh my god.
Alright, let's move on to Pablo's lovely
photo show.
You got bad
AI.
See, no, he went all the way down the hole. He is so far down the hole, his audio is down the rabbit hole with him.
He's been consumed by the AI generator that we were just joking about. Alabaster, we're going to say this to you because I don't know if the audience can hear you, but we cannot. So I'm going to imitate you. What are the chances that Andrew Wiggins is having a good time here?
That's good. Yeah.
So here we go. We got some screenshots. My man Wiggins hanging off to do your life. You didn't power nap before the parade. a real 7 p.m. on Father's Day energy from Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah,
I recognize that face.
I'm gonna have a few beers. It'll be fine. 7 p.m. rolls around. You're like, bad.
I went to a music festival this weekend. It's my first one ever.
I saw that. And, well, which one was it? How was it?
It was Something in the Water, and it was a lot of fun. But as soon as I started to get that tired Wiggs face, I just went on ahead home. There was some artist that I wanted to see, but I was like, you know what? I don't care that much that I want to be tired all day tomorrow or like make myself miserable. So yeah, Wiggs, go home. Take a nap if you need to. Drink something a little softer.
Spencer, Spencer, I just want to interject here and point out that last week, David Jacoby, our friend and colleague, went on this fake television show and declared that live music was overrated as a genre. And Dominique apparently has enacted that advice and counsel.
No, I enjoy it. It's not overrated. I enjoyed it. But
you were just sleepy.
Yeah.
I was going to say, can I parse the question here? The idea is this. If I'm going intentionally for live music, good. If live music just shows up where I'm at,
never good.
Bad. I need never intent. Good. I don't need to be sitting there and somebody's like, do you know what would go well with brunch? Jazz. At one point, somebody decided jazz and brunch go well together. I disagree. I would like to hear the person and not a terrible version of Satin Doll. That's really what I would like. So
I'm with you. I've never been anywhere that I was surprised by music and been happy by it. Like, it's like, I don't want your random live performance. Like, it's, I need to be fully anticipating it.
Wait, why do people think that Andrew WK wouldn't enjoy brunch? Why are people going to the exact opposite end of the musical spectrum with the jazz thing?
You might as well have a death metal brunch. I'm going to be just
screamo brunch,
right? Yeah, screamo brunch. Let's just go ahead and do it. I'm going to jump line here. Andrew Wiggins, there's about a 0% chance that man needs a nap. He needs something. He needs a soft surface. That's zero. Zero.
I mean, he looked happy to me. I'm going 100. I think that you guys are confusing tired with another state of body that he was in, and he was in a happy state, too happy to acknowledge the camera with a smile. I've been there before.
Can we see the photo one more time, Alabaster? Just show us one last time so I can just re-examine. Yeah.
Oh no, that man's dying.
I will say, I'm gonna split the difference and just say 50%, because my man Wiggs looks wildly dehydrated. And it can't be fun in that state.
Yeah.
Oh goodness.
Yeah, by the way, look at Clay. You know, Clay's like always on low simmer. Like, personality-wise, he's on low simmer. He's been conserving battery for, like, you know, 20-something years at this point. Last time he got too hyped probably involved, like, a ball pit. And then he just chilled out, right?
Spencer,
so, like, when it came time to celebrate, he had battery. He had reserves. He's ready to go. He's probably still awake.
Even more than that, we just learned that Klay Thompson, the NBA's premier Aquarius, is more hydrated than any other person in sports, arguably. He loves the water. And all of this feels like this is his time now. And so, Alabaster, I don't know if you can like say stuff to us that we can hear, but let's give it a shot.
Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me? Okay, I'm back.
You're back.
Dominique
is trying
one.
To gaslight
guy,
Alabaster for the podcast audience.
This guy needs Taco Bell and like a Pedialyte, and he's got the spins, and he's like, you know, trying to stare at one spot on the ceiling while having one foot on the floor. He paraded too hard. He's miserable at this point.
Wiggs is in the bathroom running cold water on his wrists because someone told him that works.
Is that a thing? Like, I've never heard
that. That'll wake you up. Yeah, someone told me that once, and I've been doing it for years ever since, but I'm in such a state.
Yeah. Do you know what this man needs? He needs Uber Eats and a good movie on TNT that he's seen 42 times already, right? That's what he needs. He needs, like, Master and Commander to come on, right?
Oh.
He needs some comfort food.
So, Spencer, someone recommended me Master and Commander recently from the spirit of, as a dad, it's a crime that you have not watched this yet. Do I need to watch Master and Commander? Dominique, have you seen Master and Commander?
You lost me. You lost me at the first word.
Yeah.
The Washington Masters and Commanders?
Yeah, I'm good on that one.
So, it's got all of the following. History, boats, piracy, guns, sword play, a little bit of science, but no math, right? No math whatsoever.
That's good.
And it's got Russell Crowe. You can sell any dad in the world on this movie except for Dominic.
Black people? Any of them?
So about that. It turns out, not the most diverse crews on British ships at the time. Yeah.
I don't know what the movie was about. I'm sorry. I
can make it. I'll put it this way. No black people were harmed in the story. So maybe
that's
right.
I can handle that.
I just looked up the Wikipedia page for it. There are no black people in that part of the ship, at least. So
that's fair. I want to watch the other story, Serfs and Peasants, instead of Masters and Commander.
A man operates on himself. That happens in the movie. It's like the most like masculine dumb thing ever. It's great. Like, no, I got it myself. And you're like, yeah, you do, buddy. So yeah, go watch it. It's fantastic.
That is big dad energy. I'm gonna fix this, and this is my own body.
That may be the most dad thing about. I don't need to go to the hospital.
DIY surgery.
Give me a mirror and a needle.
Goodness.
Alabaster, have you seen Master and Commander? And do you want us to stop talking about Master and Commander?
I haven't seen it. I'm more of a like, if I'm in that Wigan state, I need a Fast and Furious marathon on TNT, and I can just lean into feeling like I'm part
that's
of the
like, you know what? That's Bad Boys. That's Bad Boys for me. Like, put on one of the Bad Boys.
Great call. Great call.
Both great, yeah, post-boot and rally options. Except boot and watch Bad Boys, I guess, would be the actual order of operations there.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to some more Warrior stuff. And this time it's Kenny Atkinson, who we know to be a good coach. He had gotten forced out of Brooklyn, then he's a Warriors assistant. We thought he was going to coach LaMelo, and that would be a great thing moving forward. But he backed out. And our question, what are the chances Kenny Atkinson made a good decision by staying with the Warriors?
So sources close to Kenny. It's funny that we're at the Kenny Atkinson topic. It's June 20th. Like for people who don't get why we're talking about Kenny Atkinson is one of those NBA nerds' favorite assistant coaches, right? He had the head job in Brooklyn. KD forced him out. Allegedly, he was a guy who was really respected on the Knicks as an assistant. He's part of the Linsanity story too, actually. But he has been with the Warriors, honestly, like looking like the opposite of Andrew Wiggins did in that photo. He's just been looking like he loves his life. Like, why would he go and coach the Hornets and work for, I mean, can you imagine working for Michael Jordan? Can you just imagine how much more stressful that must be compared to, like, riding on these parade floats where you don't have to do anything? And, I mean, he's doing some stuff, but, like, not nearly the thing.
He's going
to
be the number one assistant now. Mike Brown's leaving, so he's going to be a lot of responsibility. I think that's the interesting question to me is, he's a sought-after coach. He's going to be a sought-after coach as long as the Warriors are still good, and he has that resume to point to. So you want to pick the right job, but you don't want to wait too long. And the question is, where else are you going to find a place that has a core of a couple of good players that you can build around where there's going to be a vacancy? The working for Michael Jordan thing is a gift and a curse. I think it's probably hard to please him as a boss, but you got a shield. Because when people want to criticize the Charlotte Hornets, they shooting at Mike because he's been there so long and they haven't done anything. They're not shooting at you. It gives you some room to work with the young talent that they have down there. So I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe he knows something. He has plans for something else going forward. Because I completely throw out what you started with, Pablo. It's like, why would he want to take this job? Because he's a freaking coach. He wants to be a head coach. No one like aspires to be a professional assistant. At some point, he wants a head coaching job. This just may not be the best opportunity.
Yeah, that's what it says to me, because these are rare opportunities. There's not a whole lot of these seats, and you don't get a whole lot of chances to take them. I know that sometimes you think of the NBA and you think of coaches as being not unimportant, but replaceable, right? Not quite like soccer managers. Soccer managers are basically like spark plugs. You just pull them in, put them out. That's not quite how NBA managers are. But in terms of coaching, he just saw something he didn't like. Yeah. Like, that's it. There's just can't be a fit issue there. And he has to be super patient. It's not like it's his first gig. And he's looking for the right situation. And he might also want to avoid the situation he found with the Nets, where it turned out he wasn't exactly the fit that they needed. So, yeah, if he's this good and he's waiting, he just saw something that didn't fit.
I mean, the kind of pushback is like, I guess Michael Jordan isn't the type of owner that can afford to go into the luxury tax. But other than that, I'm not sure what better opportunity is going to open up anytime soon, because they have young stars that potentially will not push him around, and they have a core that you can build around in a reasonable East Coast city with presumably an interesting and attractive owner who can sell to free agents to come down there. I guess I'm just wondering what job he thinks is going to open up soon. I'm sure he and his
Sixers.
Sixers is one of them.
Excuse me. Sixers. Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, I don't know how attractive that job is, honestly. I don't know. It's a high-pressure situation with a star who We're not sure if he's ever like going to be fully healthy. And another star that we're not sure how much he weighs.
Thank you for bringing Big James back.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe he's looking at the Thunder next year after they get the French kid that everyone's excited about. Ooh, that's all.
They love that French
kid. I'm doing this. I'm trying to learn a little bit about this year's draft. And everybody wants to talk about the French kid who has been killing everybody. And he's not out till next year.
No. What's people love Victor Wembanyama. Yeah, we did him on ESPN Daily today. Everybody loves this French kid. Anyway, Kenny Atkinson, I'm so sorry. 100% making the right decision, but we've already moved on to the French kid. Everybody has moved on to the French kid.
Poor Chet. Chet, the only thing I hear about Chet, Chet Holmgren, who could potentially be the number one overall pick this year, is he's really good, but that French kid cooked him, and he was younger than him. It's just like, man, they don't – everyone has moved on to he is, what, like Kevin Durant level talented. I want to watch him play basketball. I haven't yet. Just seen clips of him looking like a 6 foot guy despite being 6'10". Pretty impressive.
So yeah, he looks close like to the French kid. Yeah.
Yeah, he looks like somebody that you just – he's like the creative player where you're just like, height, weight. Like, that's just put the sliders in opposite directions, but gave him the speed of somebody who's like 5'11".
Yes.
Say his name again, Pablo.
So Victor Wembanyama is the kid from France. Wembanyama.
All right, cool.
From France. He's like 7'3", 7'4", like 190-something. Chet Holmgren had the misfortune of being 7'1", 195. So he's not even the best skinny skyscraper that in an engineering program would sort of collapse just based on the math of his existence.
You did that joke better on the Daily this morning.
God, I hate that you listen to both of these shows. Alabaster.
Big Wembanyama guy over here. Victor Wembanyama had 8 blocks against Chet in an international competition when Chet was a senior in high school. Well, against Chet and Paolo and the top three guys in this draft.
All of our best young boys, the French kid, demolished.
Yeah. I'm going to have to do a deep dive. I want to know, like, everything about him, his true history, like, why he didn't play soccer.
He's 7'2". That's probably why.
Well, he wasn't 7'2" when he was a kid. Like, it's like every kid in this country, if you end up, like, a star hockey player or baseball player, the question is, why didn't you play football or basketball? I feel like the same thing can be true of a very tall French kid.
I think the answer for hockey is football wasn't violent enough and I wanted to play with knives on my feet. That's it. If you are a potential football player and you end up in hockey, you're special. You're a very, and you're rich. You're near a place where they can keep an entire sheet of ice in 90 degrees. That's the other answer.
I think that's the testament to how much this country loves football, because football equipment is not cheap. But you can find a football team in every hood in the country. They find a way to keep that equipment clean and pass it down to make sure that people can use it in play. And ice, too, is expensive. Sorry. Save us.
Ice. Expensive.
All right, Pablo, you got to run the show, man.
All right, give us the card, and I will. You will read it for the podcast audience. Alabaster is definitely not having tech issues. This is his voice.
If Bradley Beal has already made his free agency decision, then blank.
Oh, God.
So Bradley Beal has been making noises via sources.
I saw Bradley
that
yesterday.
He has made. You saw him? He was out there at your festival?
Yeah. I managed to talk my way into some backstage passes for the last day of the festival. And it's a
Did you do any reporting while you were backstage on
television show? I looked at him. Gave him a head nod. He's still tall. That's the reporting.
Okay, that's good. Still tall.
Yeah,
put that on a first take, Kyron.
Also quite drippy. Give him that. So that's what we got. Tall and drippy.
All right. Tall, drippy, and allegedly has made up his mind but isn't telling anybody. And okay, what does that mean?
I can tell you what that means. Do you want me to read it to you? From a Bleacher Report article, sourcing Taylor Rooks. His decision to opt into his player option would hinge on whether he believes the Wizards can win in 22, 23, and beyond. I'm going to translate that for you. He's gone. He's out.
Yeah. And, I mean, what's the point in holding that decision if you want to stay? Like, there's no benefit if you're going to stay in this city, then you go around telling this city that you're going to stay in this city.
It's a great point, Dominique. It also actually adds up via your reporting that he was out at a music festival in D.C. Probably doesn't want to declare, hey, I'm leaving all y'all, and then going out to celebrate in the streets with all of y'all. So, yeah, maybe this actually does add up.
There was one big travesty this weekend at Something in the Water, and this is only for Alabaster and other D.C. natives. Justin Timberlake got on stage and proceeded to yell out, DC, beat your feet, and then started to do some sort of river dance, which is not the go-go dance style known as beat your feet that the locals appreciate. He messed it all up. I know no one thinks this is funny or interesting, but people from DC, but they will appreciate it. It was atrocious. Wait, I'm not even from here, and it was bad.
You're telling me that Justin Timberlake was appropriating a culture that wasn't his? No.
I was so shocked because I was like, how could he have not learned in the past that this is not something you could do? And especially, at least do it right. Like, he did it wrong. Okay. I'm sure there's a side-by-side. If not, I'll find a side-by-side for you of what he did and what beating your feet actually looks like. And it was atrocious.
Pablo, he has not come for you yet, okay? But he's already done that with Dominique.
Yeah.
And he did it with me. Because if you remember,
yes,
Justin Timberlake went full wilderness beard man.
Yep, Justin Vernon.
One album. Man of the Woods. And universally, those of us who actually look like men of the woods and sometimes sleep in them, we were appalled by it. So he came for our culture. Eventually, he will come for yours.
He's coming Timberlake, for everybody.
Justin Timberlake, everybody. Our culture is not your costume.
What is
the message of today's episode of Debatable?
What is the thing that Justin Timberlake is going to steal from you, Pablo? Hurry up, because Alabaster has to be one to join in and steer us back to the topic.
I mean, he's going to steal, obviously, my ability to have these awesome calves. These no calves.
Yeah.
Is that really okay?
Is that a good angle?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, wow, that's actually surprising. Yeah, angle. That's the angle. Stop right there. That's the one.
That's going to be so uncomfortable. Stay that way for 10 minutes. Hold it up.
Just keep that strength. So
there you go.
What is this? Is this a what are the chances? What are we doing? Do I have to give you percentages or something?
He's already made his free agency decision then.
Oh.
Then he's leaving D.C. Oh, yeah, he's gone. He's done.
Let's get to this Brady Manning thing. So I know what this is all about. I talked about it this morning.
Some cold water on my wrists.
We can hear you. Cool. You're good.
Okay, wonderful.
Pablo's gone, but yeah.
First of all, great calves. That shocked me.
Thank you. I almost passed out.
But here's some sound from Bart Scott. If Peyton Manning was harder to play against than Tom Brady, then blank.
For me, I'd much rather go against Tom Brady every day of the week than to go against Peyton Manning.
That's how you feel.
I believe that's how everybody feels.
Interesting.
That. In the heyday, let's also point out, I'm so afraid of Tom Brady.
Brett
and Han look like a superhero duo.
Bart and Han look like French Disneyland, like Falcon and Winter Soldier, like deal.
The off brand. Yeah.
Oh, is that actually my record against them? Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, I. One that we lost, I gave up the final touchdown to Randy Moss. The year that they went undefeated, I was with the Ravens. We had them beat, fourth down, all-out blitz. They did a fade to Randy Moss. I was covering him. I went to cover the fade because obviously that's what they're going to do. But Ed blitzed and hit Tom Brady, which caused the ball to be short. Moss came back, caught it, touchdown, game over. I was very sad.
So Spencer, did Dominique just blame that play on Ed Reed being good? Is that what just happened there?
You know, I don't think so. However, even if that is the move Dominique made, he was guarding Randy Moss, which means he'd already lost. I know Dominique was a professional athlete. I feel very qualified to say I have watched enough Randy Moss tape to say that he was going to win. he was going to win against anyone, right?
I'll have you know that I did mm-hmm. quite well against Randy Moss because I played him a lot when I was in Denver, and yeah. he had Kerry Collins, and mm-hmm. he seemed to not want to play football anymore because Oakland yeah. was not very good. But mm-hmm. Spencer's right. When I played that game against Randy Moss, I had a very distinct strategy. It was 20 yards and under, you can have it, Randy. I'm just going to tackle you and live to fight another day. But if you watch any of that tape, I was out of my back pedal so quick. If he ran a 5 yard out, 10 yard out, you good. What you're not going to do to me, Randy, is double move me and run past me. But none of that. Right,
that's good. These 60 feet may be yours, yeah. but the rest of them are mine.
Yeah, you take right. that. So I'm a like, tough negotiator, man.
Yeah, this is like saying that you got out deadlifted by the world's strongest man. It ain't a thing. It's fine. I wanted to ask though, like, what made Peyton Manning harder to play against than Tom Brady? If this is true, right?
I'm sure. I mean, 0-3. 0-3 against Peyton Manning is that card's evaluation of dominance.
I think this headline seemed like it was catchy, but most people, once you heard it, was like, yeah, actually, that's true. And maybe Tom Brady is a different quarterback now than he was then when I was playing against him. But Tom Brady was always a part of a team in which they played the entire game trying to maximize their chance to win. When you were playing against Peyton Manning, it was kind of two separate teams. And Peyton Manning believed that he had to win every single game. And the hardest thing about it was they only had like 5 to 10 plays. They didn't do anything tricky. He was accurate and he was smart enough. He would study the entire defense, the entire game plan, all the games we've played, and study the sideline mannerisms and gestures and do everything so that if everyone, he would want to know the play before you were running it. And everyone would have to hold the disguise the entire time throughout all of his hard counts, throughout his quick counts and all that stuff. And as soon as one person out of all of these people tipped to him what the play was, then he would change his play to take advantage of the defense that you were in. So even if you did it well for 70% of the game, that 25% where he knew the play, he was going to kill you. And that level of like attention to detail is freaking exhausting. And you never had that with Brady.
So if I wanted to explain it to the layperson and just take all skill out of it, it was far more irritating and taxing to play Peyton, right? Like far more irritating because he's doing all the flapping, he's doing changing plays, he's looking at what you're doing, and Brady was just going to rip it, right? Just like, okay, that's our play.
Yeah, they would send in a play and Brady would run it. He might audible a little bit, but every single play, Peyton was out there trying to dissect you, and it was exhausting, frankly. And I think we in Baltimore, we held him to like 16 points one time. And to me, that feels like a win. We only scored 13 points, but I'm counting it. That was a win. We beat him.
Yes. When you put in the Vegas betting line, I'm guessing on that game, Dominique may have come out ahead.
We got an interception in that game. Ed got an interception in that game. The one that I think Belichick talks about in that greatest players thing. About how good Ed was. And obviously Ed was incredible, but what we had to go through to get that interception to happen was absurd. So we're in a coverage. They run a comeback. We're in man coverage. They run a comeback. Reggie Wayne catches it in front of me. They hurry up to the line to repeat the play. We are yelling that we're going to repeat, run the same coverage because we know Peyton wants to keep us in that coverage so he can keep hitting that comeback. I look back at Ed, it's something we had talked about before. It's like, we're going to yell, run it, run it, run it. We are going to run it, but I'm going to get over top. You sit on the comeback. I sit on the comeback. He converts to a go because that's what they do. Ed takes two steps away and then fires back over to the side because that's what Peyton does. Peyton's snapping. Ed shows that we're still in man coverage. Peyton checks it. Then he turns to throw it after he looks Ed off. Then he turns to throw it over to me, sees that I'm squatting on the comeback. So Reggie converts and puts his hand up. Then Ed gets there and he's like, oh, we got him, throws it up. Ed gets there, gets an interception. That's for one interception. It's just one interception.
You basically had to become freaking, you had to set up like the Home Alone house. as a trap.
And the game, I think Ed had an interception against Brady. That way worked out. We were in cover two. They ran like a high-low concept on the sideline. So like a one guy's low, one guy's high. I'm cover two in the flat. Ed's over top in halves. I like took a step forward to the front guy, and then I sprinted back to the deep guy, tipped the ball. Ed caught it, interception. A lot easier. We're just playing football out there. We're not doing the SATs. Like, it was a regular thing. Like, he knew we were cover two. I knew we were cover two. I knew they were going to do high-low concept, showed low, came high, tip it, interception. It was not a dissertation, which is what it felt like. Like, I needed ice on my, like, brain stem after that interception. Sorry.
This has been the most dad episode of Debatable we've ever done. We're talking so Glory Day war stories. We're talking about Master and Commander. We're talking about how to hydrate properly. I mean, I don't know if we're supposed to like, okay, fill in the blank here. I feel like Dominique filled in all of the blanks there. Dominique, a person who did not remember the name of Victor Wembanyama and called him that French kid, just recalled from perfect memory to very complicated, distinct plays from like a decade.
If that ain't the most dad shit that's ever happened. In life.
Yeah.
Because go ask your dad about something that happened last week. He won't know. But ask your dad about the 96 Olympics. Oh, he's going to give you a play-by-play.
Here's a fun story about that clip, by the way. Dominique once wrote something about Ed Reed, and we were talking about it. And I said, oh, yeah, there's that clip where Ed gets an interception off of Peyton. And Dominique goes, yeah, I'm the corner on that play. Like, I just talking about this thing he was in and didn't even be like, yeah, so you'll know that because you're in that clip.
Yeah,
I'm like, no, I was Ed, there. Ed I made was, all of this happen.
I was so happy after that, like happier than any of the interceptions I had, because I know what it took to get there. And I think the perception is like, I just got cooked, which may be true, but that is less a testament to Ed's greatness than what we actually went through the week prior. We're in my basement watching film, talking about if this happens, we're going to do this. He's going to think that. Then we're going to do this. And he's going to think we know, but we don't know. He knows what we know. Interception. So great.
I love that Dominique went from that to doing this show, which is the opposite of preparation. Like the exact opposite game planning that went into that goes into what, Alabaster, what? But you're saying,
oh,
you prepared this. This is how. Come on, you can't say this is a prepared produced show. This is Justin Timberlake appropriating your jeans culture, Pablo.
Well,
appropriating jeans culture.
Touché. What a heat. Just to be nice. Justin Timberlake, just heat checking on everyone's cultures. Like, I can do that this week.
How can you heat check when you're not hot right now? He just pulling from midcourt and he ain't made a layup in a long time. I thought he was an actor now.
Dominique saying he has not brought sexy back, I suppose.
No. He's going to make a big comeback in Europe. Eurovision. Man's going to be wearing Lederhosen.